Osho. No water, no moon. Talks on Zen stories. Discourse number 7. Given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India.
Settled in a small country temple where there were many statues of Buddha, each having its own shrine. The nun burned incense before her golden Buddha each day, but not liking the idea of her perfume straying to the other statues, she devised a funnel through which the smoke would ascend to her statue only. This blackened the nose of the golden Buddha and made it especially ugly.
One of the greatest problems that is bound to face everybody who is traveling the path is to make a clear-cut distinction between love and attachment. They appear the same. They are not. They look alike. They are not. Rather, on the contrary, even hate is more similar to love than attachment. Attachment is just the contrary. It hides the reality of hatred and gives the appearance of love. It kills love. Nothing else can be so poisonous as attachment, as possessiveness. So try to understand this, then we can enter this beautiful story. It has happened to many. It is happening to you. Because mind is so confused between love and attachment, and those who look at things from the outside, they always become victims. Attachment is taken as if it is love. And once you have taken attachment, possessiveness as love, you will always go on missing the real thing. A false coin you have chosen. Now you will not look for the real coin because you think this is the real. You have been deceived. Possessiveness, attachment is the false love. Hatred is better because at least it is true. At least it is a fact. And hatred can become love any day. But possessiveness can never become love. You have simply to drop it to grow into love. Why attachment appears like love? And what is the difference? The mechanism is subtle. Love means that you are ready to merge yourself into the other. It is a depth, deepest depth possible. The deepest abyss possible in which you can fall and go on falling and falling, and there is no end to it. There is no bottom to it. It is an eternal falling into the other. It never ends. To love means the other has become so significant that you can lose yourself. Love is surrender, unconditional. Because if there is even a single condition, then you are important, not the other. Then you are the center, not the other. And if you are the center, then other is just a means. You are using the other, exploiting the other, finding satisfaction, gratification through the other. But you are the goal. And love says, make other the end, and dissolve and merge. It is a dying phenomenon, a death process. That's why people are afraid of love. You may talk about it. You may sing about it. But deep down you are afraid of love. You never enter into it. All your poetries, all your songs about love are just substitutes. So that you can sing without entering into it. So that you can feel that you are loving without loving. And love is such a deep need that you cannot live without it. Either the real or some substitute is needed. The substitute may be false. But at least for a time while, for a time being, it gives you the feeling that you are in love. And even the falses enjoy it. Sooner or later, you will realize that it is false. Then you are not going to change the false love into a real love. Then you will change the lover, the beloved. These are the two possibilities. When you come to know that this love is false, you can change, you can drop this false love and become a real lover. The other possibility is change the partner. And this is how your mind functions. Whenever you feel that this love has not given me the bliss it promised, rather on the contrary, I have become more miserable. You think the other is deceiving, not that you are deceiving. Nobody can deceive you except yourself. So you feel the other is deceiving, the other is responsible, change the wife, change the husband, change the master, change the god, move from Buddha's temple to Mahavir's temple, change your religion, change your prayer, don't go to the mosque, go to the church, change the other. So for a time while again, you can have the feeling that you are in love, in prayers. But sooner or later again the false will be known, because it cannot satisfy. You can befool yourself, but how long one can befool oneself? Then again, you have to change the other. If you come to realize the other is not the problem, your love is false. You have been talking about it. You have not been doing anything to enter into it. You are afraid and scared. Love is death-like, and if you are afraid of death, you will be afraid of love also. In death, only your body dies. The essential, the ego, that looks essential to you, remains, is safe. The mind that appears significant to you is carried on further into another life. Your inner identity remains the same, only the outer garb, the clothes change in a death. So death is never very deep, it is just superficial. And if you are afraid of death, how can you be ready to enter into love? Because in love, not only the garb, not only the house, but you die. The mind, the ego dies. This fear of death becomes the fear of love, and the fear of love becomes the fear of prayer, meditation. These three things are similar: death, love, meditation. And the route is the same you have to pass. And if you have never loved, you cannot pray. You cannot be in meditation. And if you have never loved and meditated, you will miss the beautiful experience of death completely. If you have loved, then death is such a beautiful and intense experience that you cannot compare it with anything in life. Life can never be so deep as death, because life is spread out on 70, 80 years. Death is in a single moment, so intense. Life can never be so intense. And death is the culmination. It is not the end. It is the culmination, the very peak, the whole life you have been making effort to reach. And what stupidity, when you reach to the peak, you are so afraid, you feel so dizzy, you close your eyes, you become so scared, you become unconscious. People die, they die in an unconscious state. They miss the experience. So, love can be helpful, because love will prepare you for death, and love will prepare you for meditation also. In meditation, you have to lose. The other is not there. You have to simply lose yourself. Love is deeper than death. Meditation is even deeper than love, because at least the other is there in love. You have something to cling. And when you can cling, something of you survives. But in meditation there is no other. That's why Buddha, Mahavir, Lao Tse, they deny the existence of God. Why? They very well know God is, but they deny the existence so that you have no support left for meditation. If the other is there, your meditation can become at the most love. Devotion. But the total death is still not been experienced. Total death is possible only when there is no other and you simply dissolve, you simply evaporate. There is nobody to cling to. Then happens the greatest ecstasy. The word ecstasy is very meaningful. This English word ecstasy is so beautiful and so significant. No other language has such a word. Ecstasy means to stand outside. Ecstasy means you are dead completely, and you are standing outside yourself and looking at this death as if your whole existence has become a corpse. You are out of it and looking at your own death. Then the supreme bliss happens. If I say to you, you will be scared. If I say to you that you are in search of a supreme death, you will be scared. But you are in search of it. The whole religion is the art of learning how to die. Love means death. But attachment is not death. Love means the other has become so significant, you can dissolve yourself. You trust the other so much that you need not have your own mind. You can put it aside. That's why people say love is mad. And people say love is blind. It is. Not that your eyes go blind, but when you put your ego aside, your mind aside, for everybody else you will look blind and mad. This is the state of madness. You are not thinking on your own. You trust the other so much that now there is no need to think, because thinking is needed if there is doubt. Doubt creates thinking. Doubt is the base of thinking. If you cannot doubt, thinking stops. If you cannot thinking, where is the ego? How the ego can stand? That's why ego always doubts, thinks, never trusts. If you trust, no ego appears. The ego is gone. Hence the insistence of all religions that only through faith and trust and love you will enter the temple of the divine. There is no other door to it. Through doubt you cannot enter. Because through doubt you remain. In trust you are lost. Love is a trust, dissolving of the ego. The center moves to the other. The other becomes so significant, your very life, your very being. Not even a flicker of doubt comes to you. It is so peaceful, so beautiful when not a flicker of doubt comes to you, not a ripple in the mind. A trust is complete, perfect. In that perfect trust, there is beatitude, a blessing. Even if you think about it, you will have a small glimpse of it, what it can be. But if you feel, it is tremendous. There is nothing like it. But the ego creates a false trick. Instead of love, it gives you attachment, possessiveness. Love says, be possessed by the other. Ego says, possess the other. Love says, dissolve into the other. Ego says, let the other yield to you. Force the other to be yours. Don't allow the other to move in freedom. Cut the other's freedom. Let him become your periphery, your shadow. Love gives life to the other. Possessiveness, attachment, kills the other, takes the life of the other. That's why lovers, so-called lovers, always kill each other. They are poisonous. Look at a husband and a wife. Someday they were lovers. They thought they were lovers, and then they started killing each other. Now they are two dead persons. They have become imprisonment for each other. They are simply afraid and bold, scared of the other. Once it happened, in a circus, there was a woman lion tamer. And fiercest lions were in her perfect control. She will order them and they will obey. And the greatest thing was, when everybody is breathing will stop, the fiercest lion will be ordered to come near and he will come. And the lion tamer, the woman, will have a piece of sugar on her tongue. And the lion will come and take the sugar from her mouth. And everybody will go mad, so much excitement. And everybody will clap and appreciate. One day, Mullah Nasruddin was there. Everybody clapped, but he was not moved at all. He said, nothing. Anybody can do that. The woman, the lion tamer, looked scornfully and said, can you do it? He said, yes. Anybody can do it, as the lion can do it. Man is so afraid of women. And this is through the experience of love. Love, the so-called love, kills each other. Otherwise, why this world is so ugly? So many lovers. Everybody is a lover. The husband loving the wife loving the husband, the parents loving the children, and the children loving the parents, and friends, and everybody, relatives. The whole world is in love. So much of love, and so much ugliness, and so much misery. Somewhere, something seems to have gone deeply wrong, in the very roots. This is not love. Otherwise, fear disappears. The more you love, the less you fear. When love really comes to its totality, there is no fear. But in possessiveness, fear goes on growing more and more. Because when you possess a person, you are always afraid he may leave you. He may go away. And the doubt is always there. The husband is always doubting the wife may love somebody else. They become spies on each other. And they cut each other's freedom, so there is no possibility. But when you cut the freedom, when you cut the possibility of the unknown, life becomes dead, still. Everything becomes flat, meaningless, a boredom, a monotony. And the more it happens, the more you become possessive. Because when life is ebbing, when the love is going, when something is going out of your hand, you become more possessive, more clinging. You become more protective. You create more walls and more prisons. This is the vicious circle. The more prisons, the less life will be there. You will be more afraid that something is happening and love is disappearing, so create a bigger prison. Then love will disappear more, then still a bigger prison is needed. And there are many subtle methods how to do it. Jealousy, a continuous jealousy. And possessiveness to such an extent that the other remains no more a person. The other becomes just a thing, a commodity. Because a thing can be possessed easily than a person. Because a thing cannot rebel, cannot disobey, cannot go away without your permission, cannot fall in love with somebody else. When love becomes a frustration, and it will become, because it is not love. Then you by and by start loving things. Look at people when they polish their car, the way they look at their car, enchanted. Look, the romantic light that comes to their face when they look at their car. They are in love with the car. In the West particularly, where love has been killed completely, people are in love with things or animals. Dogs, cats, cars, houses. It is easier to love a thing or an animal. A dog is more faithful than a wife ever can be. You cannot find more faithful an animal like dog. He remains faithful. There is no danger. A wife is dangerous, a husband is dangerous. Any moment he can move away and you cannot do anything. And when he moves, your whole ego is shattered. You feel hurt. To protect that hurt ever happening, you start killing the husband and the wife, so they become just like cars and houses, dead things. But this is the misery, that whenever you possess a person, he becomes a thing. But you wanted to love a person, not a thing. Because a thing can be possessed, but the thing cannot be responsive. You may love a thing, but the thing cannot answer your love. You may hug your car, but the car cannot hug you. You may kiss your car, but the kiss cannot be returned. I have heard about Picasso, that a woman appreciator, a fan of Picasso, once came to him and said, "I saw your self-portrait in an art gallery. It is so beautiful. And I became so possessed by it that I forgot completely and kissed the portrait." Picasso looked at the woman and said, "Did the portrait return the kiss?" The woman said, "What are you asking? How a portrait can return the kiss?" Then Picasso said, "Then that is not my portrait." How can a dead wife return the kiss? How can a dead husband return the kiss? This is the misery. If you want to possess, you kill. And the moment you have succeeded, the whole glory is lost. Because now the other cannot respond. The other can respond only in freedom. But you cannot allow freedom because you are not in love. Love is never possessive. It cannot be by its very nature. And not only loving a man or a woman, if you start loving a Buddha, you will repeat this whole thing. You will do the same. You will be possessive there also. That's why so many temples have been created. Possessiveness. Christians think Christ belongs to them. Christ cannot belong to anybody. But Christian thinks he belongs to them. They are the possessors. Mountains think Muhammad belongs to them. You cannot draw a picture of Muhammad. He will be dragged to the court. You cannot make a statue of Muhammad because Mountains won't allow. But who are these Mountains? How they became the possessors? They have turned Muhammad into a dead thing. Nobody can possess Muhammad, nobody can possess Christ. They are so big. Your hands are so small, they cannot be possessed. Love can never be possessed. It is such a vital force and such an infinite force, and you are so tiny and so small, you cannot possess it. But Christians have their Christ, Mohammedans have their Muhammad, Hindus their Krishnas, Buddhists their Buddha. In Jains there are two communities. They have divided their Mahavir. And there are few temples in India. The temples belong to both the communities, so there is always fight and always cases in the courts, because a time division is there. In the morning the Swatambaras will worship, in the evening the Digambaras, the other community, will worship. And they change, because Swatambaras put false eyes on the Mahavir's statue. And Digambaras worship Mahavir with closed eyes. So they cannot worship the same statue. First they have to close the eyes or remove the false eyes. Then only they are at ease. Then it is their Mahavir. But how Mahavir can be yours or mine? Is Mahavir a thing, a house, a shop, a commodity? But lovers are false lovers. They are really possessors, not lovers. This has happened in religion so deeply that religion, rather than becoming a blessing to the world, has proved dangerous. Through this possessiveness, religion becomes the sect. Then you go on worshipping the dead thing. And then nothing happens in your life, and then you think something is wrong in religion. Nothing is wrong in religion. Mahavir could have transformed you. Krishna could have given you the life that he had, but you didn't allow him. Christ certainly could have become the salvation, but you didn't allow him. Jews crucified him, and you have mummified him in the churches. Now he is a dead thing. Good to worship, good to purchase, but how a dead Christ can transform you? And the priest knows it very well. That's why I have come never across a priest who is a believer. Priests are deep down always unbelievers, because they know the whole business. And they know this Christ is dead. When they worship, it is just a gesture to show you. It happened once. It is a historic fact that in the year 999, 31st December, there was a rumor all over the world, particularly in Christian communities, that the last day is coming on the 1st January. The year 1000, 1st January, the last day of judgment is coming, and the world is going to be dissolved and everybody is going to face the divine. So on 31st December 999, all the Christians all over the world closed their shops, closed their offices. People even distributed their things, and because 1st January morning there is going to be no war, people kissed and hugged each other, even went to the enemies to be forgiven, and there was totally a different world that evening. Everything closed, because tomorrow there is going to be no future. So why be an enemy, and why not love? And why not enjoy? People were celebrating the last days coming. All over the world, Christians closed everything. Only the offices of the Vatican in Rome were open. Because the Pope knows well, the priests know well, that this is not going to happen. This is just a superstition. And they created the whole thing. But not a single thing was distributed from the Pope. Priests are in the know. They know the Christ is dead, and you are a fool, and you are praying to a dead thing. But they cannot say it to you, because that is a trade secret. And only through it, exploitation is possible. And it is in their favor, because if Christ is alive, they cannot become the agents in between, because the alive Christ will come directly to you. He will not allow a mediator, a broker. He will not allow. Christ will not allow priests to come and stand in between the lovers and himself. He will face them. He will come to you directly. So for priests, a live Christ is dangerous. Only a dead Christ is good. Priests never like Mahavir when he is alive. They never like Buddha when he is alive. They are always against when he is alive. When he is dead, they immediately come and organize around him. Make a temple and start exploiting you. Priests are against Mahavir, Buddha, Krishna. But they know when they are dead, their name can be exploited. But you have to remember well that your love, your prayer, your worship, if it becomes possessive, you are killing. And if you kill Krishna, how can you transform you? How can he bring you to the Krishna consciousness? Impossible. Now we should enter this story. It is beautiful. A nun who was searching for enlightenment made a wooden statue of Buddha and covered it with gold leaf. It was very pretty, and she carried it with her wherever she went. Many things have to be understood, even word by word. A nun, because this is the heart of the woman to purchase. That's why not a monk, but a nun. And don't think that only women purchase, men purchase, but then they have the heart of the woman, not of the man. Why women purchase more than men? Because possession is out of fear. Man is less afraid than woman. That's why. Man is less afraid than woman. Because he is less afraid, he is less possessive. The feminine mind is more afraid. Fear is natural to it. There is always a trembling. Because of that fear, woman is more possessive. Unless she is completely satisfied that she possesses, she is not happy. And when she possesses completely, she cannot be happy, because the man is dead. Only in freedom, life exists. Hence, in the story, a nun has been chosen. But remember well, it doesn't make any point. If you are a man, it doesn't make any difference. Your mind can be feminine. There are rarely men. You may be a woman and you can have a man's fearless mind. So the distinction is not through sex, it is through attitudes. A man can be a woman can be a man. The symbol is just to show the attitude. What attitude? If you are a man and still possessive, you have a feminine mind. If you are a woman and not possessive, you have a male mind. It is said that Mahavir insisted that no woman can enter into enlightenment unless she becomes a man. People took it literally and they missed the point. They thought no woman can enter into enlightenment. So every woman who is striving will have to be born in the next life as man, and then only she can enter. This is foolishness. But no feminine mind can enter into enlightenment, that's true. Because feminine mind means fear and possessiveness. And with fear and possessiveness, no love, no meditation is possible. One woman became enlightened. Then Jains, the followers of Mahavir and followers of the Tirthankaras, were much disturbed. What to do? So they changed the name of the woman into a name of man, and they simply forgot the whole thing. A woman named Mallibai became enlightened. So what to do about the theory now? So they changed the name. They call Mallibai Mallinath. They have changed the statue. You will never find a woman's statue. And Mallinath was this Mallibai or Mallinath. She was such a rare being that they had to concede Tirtharankarahood to her. So in 24 Tirthankaras, one is a woman. But you will never find it because the name is given Mallinath. So one feels no woman has attained enlightenment. But it is true in a different, deeper sense. No feminine mind can enter. Because fear cannot enter. Possessiveness cannot enter. A nun who was searching for enlightenment made a wooden statue of Buddha. And it is very difficult for a mind which is feminine, man or woman, but the mind, if it is feminine, you will create a statue. You will create the other. You cannot be alone. A statue means the other has been created. There is no one. But you cannot be satisfied with nothingness. Something has to be there to click. Hence so many temples and so many statues. They are created out of the feminine mind. That's why you will not find many men in the temples whenever you go. Many women will be there. And if some men have come, those are hand-picked husbands. They have come with their wives. They have not come directly. Just after the wife, they had to come. When Mahavir preached, 40,000 people took sannyas from him. 30,000 were women. Only 10,000 men? What is the matter? And this is the ratio. This is the ratio with me also. If four persons come, three women, one man. and the man comes very difficultly and goes very easily, and the woman comes very easily and it is very difficult for her to go. She clings. It is very difficult for her to go. But feminine mind can create difficulties, barriers. If you start becoming possessive, then you miss. You have to remember the fear has to be left. Only then love arises. The fear has to be dropped because the fear is of the ego. And if fear exists, the ego will persist. Then you can create a statue and cling to this statue. This statue is not going to lead you to the ultimate, because this is a creation by you. You may cover it with gold leaf. It may look pretty, but it is a dead thing. You may make a golden statue, but it is not going to help. It is a dead thing. It was very pretty, and she carried it with her wherever she went. It became a burden. It has to be carried, protected. She couldn't sleep well because somebody may steal it. She couldn't go without it because somebody else may possess it. It may be taken from her. Her whole mind became possessive around it. The statue became the center. Center of her possessiveness, fear, worship. But this is not love. Years passed, and still carrying her Buddha, the nun settled down in a small country temple where there were many statues of Buddha, each having its own shrine. Years passed, nothing happened. Carrying a Buddha, nothing can happen. Because how can you carry a Buddha? You can carry only a statue. Buddha has to be lived, not carried. Buddha has to be loved, not possessed. You have to dissolve yourself in the Buddha, not to carry him as your possession. Buddha is alive if you dissolve into him. But then Buddha is dangerous, because you will never come back. It is a point from where no one can come back. Once you have fallen into it. There is no returning. There is fear and trembling. You are afraid you may be lost. And your fear is true, you are going to be lost. But with a statue there is no fear, you can carry it. The statue can be lost someday, but you cannot be lost. You can create another, even a more prettier one. There is no difficulty, it is your creation. Go to the temples, what man has done, created statues, his own creations, now bowing down before them, weeping and crying, and whole thing falls. Because the basis falls. Your tears, your prayers, to whom you are addressing them, before whom you are weeping and crying, your own creations, your own ties, howsoever beautiful and costly, it makes no difference. But you are the creator of your gods. And before them you cry and weep and you think something is going to happen. You are acting simply stupidly. Temples are filled with stupid people. They are not aware what they are doing, bowing down before their own creations. Now, how this can help you? See, carried many years past, many lives may have passed, and still carrying her Buddha, she was nowhere, just wandering from one place to another, from one life to another, from one mood to another, from one mind to another, but just wandering, reaching nowhere. Then she got fed up with the journey. The goal seems nowhere to be achieved. The goal seems nowhere to be coming closer. So she settled down in a small country temple where there were many statues of Buddha, each having its own shrine. But there were many statues in the Buddha, of the Buddha. In China, in Japan, they have created very big temples of Buddha. In China, there is one temple with 10,000 Buddhas, 10,000 shrines in one temple, 10,000 statues. But even 10,000 statues are of no help. One Buddha is enough. 10,000 statues are not enough. Why mind goes on working nonsense? One statue is not doing, so create two. This is the arithmetic. Two are not doing, so create three. 10,000 statues. One man wandering in 10,000 statues, and nothing is happening. Nothing is going to happen, because never out of a dead thing life arises. Never out of a dead statue a man is transformed. Seek a living Buddha. And if you cannot find a living Buddha, close your eyes and seek there. If you cannot find without, you will find within. Because Buddhas are never dead. They are there just to be sought. And they are always there. They may be just by the corner of your house, but you have never looked. Or you are so acquainted with the neighbor, with the corner, that you feel that you know. Nobody knows. You may meet the Buddha in a beggar. Just remain with open eyes. But if you are carrying a statue, your eyes are closed. This woman may have missed many Buddhas because of this statue, because she thinks she possesses. She already has got the Buddha, so what is the need to look? Then she settled in a temple. People who live with statues always will settle in a temple. People who live with statues cannot reach to the ultimate goal. They have to settle somewhere on the way, some by the side of the way, a shrine, a temple. Many people have settled in temples. They wandered and they searched, and then they found that nothing can be found, it is impossible. Not because the goal is very far away, the goal is very near, nearer than you can conceive, but because they are carrying statues. Those statues have become their blindness. Their eyes are closed with their statues. Their hearts are burdened with their statues. Words, statues, scriptures, dead things. I have heard. Once it happened in ancient days, a king, a very scholarly man, wanted to marry a girl. But no ordinary girl will do. He wanted a perfect woman, astrologically perfect. So he consulted many astrologers. It was very difficult. Many years passed. His youth was almost gone. He was no more young, because these astrologers are difficult people, and mathematics takes time. And then one woman will be found, and then one attribute is still lacking. Not exactly perfect. Really, you cannot find anyone perfect. It is impossible, because perfection always means death. If someone is alive, it means imperfect. That's why we say that whenever one is perfect, he is no more born. Because how can you be born if you are perfect? Then you have passed through this world, you have gained, grown. You cannot be allowed back. Then the king said to his advisors that it is enough. If not perfect, then approximately perfect will do. But my youth is passing. I am almost 38. Now find a woman. So a woman was found, not exactly 100%, but 99. Then the search started for the right time. When this king will make love to this woman, because he wanted a rare, extraordinary child. It was very, very difficult. Many scriptures were consulted, I Ching and others. Many wise men were called from faraway countries, and they consulted and they discussed. And the king was almost 44. Then one day he got fed up, and he turned them out. He burnt all the scriptures and told to his wife that enough is enough. Now we must make love. They had not made love up to now. But the woman was also old. He was also old. And with love there is a problem. If you start making love early, you can go on making love to the very end of your life. If you don't start early, you cannot make love later on. Because love making is a mechanical thing. The mechanism needs efficiency. So if a man starts making love when he is 14, he may go making love up to 80. And don't think that if you make too much love in your young age, then in your old age you will not be able. You are absolutely wrong. If you make too much only, then you will be able. And you cannot make too much love, remember that. Because the body won't allow. Too much is impossible. There is a thermostat in the body. Too much is not possible. Whatsoever you do, it is always within the limit. But by this time, the king has become impotent. He couldn't make love. The wife was frigid. They had missed the right moment. The child was never born to them. Then they had to adopt a child. This is what is happening. You have to adopt a Buddha. You have to adopt a God. It is not born to you. And God must be born to you. Otherwise it is a false God. But you have been missing because you are so much occupied with the scriptures, wise men, astrology, and all sorts of nonsense. You are so much obsessed with words, statues, temples, ritual, formalities, that by the time formalities are fulfilled, life has gone. By the time you conclude logically, life is no more there to do it. This woman finally settled in a temple, and I tell you, never settle in a temple, because a temple can be only a night shelter. It cannot be a permanent settlement. Never settle in a temple. Never settle in a sect. Never settle with the Vatican or Puri Shankaracharya. Never settle with a sectarian mind. You can have a rest, that's okay. Stay there for a night, and by the morning, before they catch hold of you, move. Go on moving, unless you reach the ultimate. Only that is the temple. But there you will not find any statues. There will you find the real, not the statue, not the portrait, but the real. Don't settle with a portrait. Don't settle with the false. Don't settle with the carbon copy. Search the original, the very source. The woman settled, she had to settle. When you carry a wooden Buddha, how can you reach enlightenment? If wooden Buddhas can give you enlightenment, then there will be no problem. A wooden Buddha is a wooden Buddha. You can carry, you can play with it. The nun burnt incense before her golden Buddha each day. The Buddha was wooden, just covered with gold. But she used to call her Buddha golden Buddha. The gold was just skin deep. Deep down there was just a wooden Buddha, nothing else. But you can hide things, and throw gold, you can hide anything. When there is not love, then there is much gold around the wife. A wooden Buddha under the leaf of gold, and you think everything is okay. And the wife also thinks everything is okay, because husband every time comes brings more and more ornament. When love is dead, ornament become very much alive. When there is love, there is no need for ornaments. You never cover a real Buddha with gold, do you? The Buddha won't allow, he will simply escape, he will say, wait. What are you doing? You will kill me. Gold kills. Life can never be covered with gold. Only death. Only death will allow you to do something. Life won't allow you such nonsense. But she called her wooden Buddha golden Buddha. The nun burnt incense before her golden Buddha each day. But not liking the idea of her perfume, strained to other statues, she devised a funnel through which the smoke would ascend to her statue only. This is the mind of a possessive person. Not even the perfume, the incense, the smoke is allowed to reach to other Buddhas, and others are also Buddhas. But my Buddha is something else. Your Buddha is nothing. In the temple, all others were Buddhas. It was not that somebody was a Krishna or somebody was a Rama. Then the difference would have been too much. She would not have stayed in that temple. But it was a Buddhist temple, so she could stay. But this was her statue, and those were not hers. When there is really love, it doesn't bother to whom it reaches. When there is love, you love your beloved person, But you cannot devise a funnel so that your love reaches only to your beloved. Love is such a phenomena that when it happens, it goes on beyond your beloved. Always goes on and on and on. It spreads to everyone. It is just like a ripple on the lake. You throw a stone on the lake, a ripple arises. And then it goes on spreading and spreading to the very end. If you love a person, it is not linear. It is circular. A wave is created. When you love a person, you are throwing a stone in the lake of love. Now, everybody will be benefited. Not only the person you love. If only the person you love you try to benefit, you will do simply the thing this nun did. It is not possible. When there is someone who loves, his love goes on falling all around. You cannot channelize it. It is not such a thing. Rivers can be channelized. It is oceanic. It cannot be channelized. Attachment can be channelized, not love. When you throw a stone in the lake, it falls at a particular spot. That's okay. But then the love goes on spreading. When you fall in love, you fall at a particular spot with a particular person. But that is the only beginning, not the end. Then love goes on spreading. Then the whole world is benefited. Whenever there is a single person of love, the whole world is benefited. There will be a center where the stone fell, from where the waves will arise and go on to the very end. There will be a center, the beloved, the lover. But the love cannot be contained there. It is a growing thing. Nobody can contain it. So the lover becomes just the door, just the opening. And then the whole universe is benefited by it. But this poor nun was just like you. Just a human mind working through human stupidities. She did not like the idea of her perfume straying to the other statues. And the other statues are also of Buddha. When I love a person, I find the divine there. Love reveals the divine in a person. Once it is revealed, all the statues of the Buddhas, then everybody is divine. The tree is divine, the cloud is divine, the beggar on the street is divine, then everybody is divine. If love has happened and you have looked to the original face of a person, which is revealed only in love, then everywhere are Buddhas. All the statues are of Buddhas. Then the whole world has become a temple. But then you are not worried. Then you are not worried that your perfume is reaching somebody. You are not worried that your lover's perfume is reaching to somebody else. You will be happy that through you, the whole world is being benefited. Through you, the whole world is receiving the blessing. If you are afraid and you try to contain it, then it is possessiveness and it will kill. Don't try to contain it. Don't try to possess it. Allow it to grow. Help it to grow. Help it to reach to everyone. Only then you will receive it. Because you can receive only when the whole world receives it. But this is the problem. Whenever you love a person, you want him to be contained, confined. It is as if you are confining a tree in a pot. Not only the roots, but the whole tree. Then you will kill it. The tree has to move to the sky. It has to spread into the sky. Its flowers will give perfume to many. Its branches will give shadow to many. Many will be benefited by its fruits. Of course, the roots are contained in you, but the tree goes on growing, and love is the greatest tree possible. It can spread into the holy sky. It cannot be confined, cannot be contained. You cannot make it finite. The very nature of love is infinite. But not liking the idea of a perfume staying to the other statues, she devised a funnel through which the smoke would ascend to her statue only. Then what happened? It was bound to happen. This blackened the nose of the golden Buddha and made it especially ugly. This happening to every lover and beloved. Because then the perfume is not perfume. It becomes just a smoke. A perfume needs to spread. Then the nose is blackened. And all the Buddhas now have blackened noses. Look at your Krishna, look at your Buddha, your Mahavir. All their noses are blackened because of you, your possessiveness. Your prayer is possessiveness. It is not real. Jains won't allow anybody to enter their temples because you are not a Jain. Hindus won't allow the untouchables because you are not the higher caste. All the temples are blackened because they are purchased. My temple, the moment I assert my, it is no more a temple. Because how a temple can be mine or yours? A temple is simply a temple. I was dragged once into court because I inaugurated a church. The church was closed at least for 20 years. The worshippers of the church had moved. They were not in India. It was a possession of some English Christian sect. And there was nobody in the town. Nobody even to take care of it. It was a beautiful church, but completely dilapidated. Then few Christians came to me. And they said, we don't belong to that sect, but we don't have a church. So can you help us? You inaugurate this church. We will start worshipping. I said, okay. So they broke the lock. They cleaned the church. They cleaned the blackened nose of the Christ. And I opened it for all. So I said, it is not a question to whom a church belongs. Those who worship, theirs is the church. But within 2-3 months, it reached to the owners, the news. They appointed a liar. He dragged me to the court because why you opened this church? The magistrate asked me, why you opened this church? It doesn't belong to these people. It is not their property. I told, a church cannot be anybody's property. Those who worship, it is theirs. A church is not a property. It is not a legal question at all. The magistrate said, don't lead us astray. We cannot go into philosophy. It is a legal question. A church is a legal question? Yes, it has become a legal question. A temple is a legal question? If a temple is a legal question, then it belongs to this world, not to that. So I said, okay, you can close it if it is a legal question. You can close it. But remember well, this is how religion is killed, murdered. It is not a property at all. But all churches, all temples have become properties. They are mine, are thine. Then Buddha's nose is blackened, and it made it especially ugly. All the temples, all the churches have become ugly. They have to be really destroyed, cleaned, so the earth is clean. And the real temple can exist only then, when these temples disappear. They have become part of your market, of your legal court. They are not now anymore symbols of the beyond. Mind is such a thing, it turns everything into a possession, because the ego can exist only if it possesses. And ego is the barrier. Ego is the water in which only reflections can be caught. Never the real can be known. Now drop this pail. Why wait for an accident? Drop this old pail and let the water flow. No water, no moon. Enough for today.